Welcome in, everybody. You're listening to Hot in the Igloo live at 5 p.m. on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Forrest Sun, Ethan Estrada here with you inside the studio here today. And, well, we have some basketball to catch up on, Ethan. We had a couple of women's games over the last weekend, and then the men, who also played a couple of games over at San Francisco State, came back home last night in a thriller. But we'll get to that a little bit later. First, let's talk about the women. And after last season, there were a lot of expectations coming in. This was your first live look at the women against Chico and then against Sonoma State. Just to start off, a rough assessment of your own.
The first game was a little bit rough, especially seeing how Chico played against a not very good NDNU women's basketball team the following day. But Chico State looked unstoppable in that game against Dominican. The only problem with Dominican in that game is they didn't really find a groove. Like we were talking about after the game, it's not like, you don't feel like they have an identity yet. And that showed a lot in the Chico State game, but they started to find a little bit more of a rhythm, especially. And it's weird because it's not like they've added a lot of new talent. For the most part, it's all the same players, if I'm correct. And it's odd that they came out and played a little flat with each other. It didn't look like the chemistry was there yet or their identity was there yet. But they're 1-1. Sonoma State looked like a formidable opponent, but still got the victory.
Yeah, and when you're talking about that Chico State game, they didn't have an identity, not let alone on offense, but on defense. I mean, they allowed 12 three-pointers from Chico State. 12 for 26 was Chico in that game. And, you know, when you're giving up 12 three-pointers, you have to ask the perimeter defense. Well, then the Penguins would go out on the perimeter, and Chico would a little backdoor cut action. So when you talk about how good Chico played, we're not taking anything away from Chico at all. They played very good. They shot, as we said, 12 for 26. They were 27 for 68 from the field. So 40%, almost 41% from the field, which is pretty good. And I just want to talk about the threes. I mean, in the first half, when you're talking about threes, they were They were 6 for 11. So, you know, 6 threes in the first half, 6 threes in the second half. They didn't really change anything. I mean, everything was consistent. Then when you talk about on the side of the Penguins, I mean, not knowing their identity, it was all Natalie Diaz. I mean, Diaz had 34 points, and then LaRocca had 17. We talked about how well LaRocca played in that game. The next highest score behind those two was Angel Collins. She had 9. And when you look at the side for Chico, 4 ladies in double digits. So Penguins had to figure out how to spread the love around.
What also hurt the Penguins in that first game against Chico was Alana Scott came out cold. Like you said, she shot 50% from three all last season, and she didn't really have it in that first game. I believe she only made two in that first game, and they lost by 6, which she makes more of those 3-pointers in her opportunities, like, you know, she can, and you come out with the victory.
Yeah, it wasn't a Alana Scott-esque night. I mean, 2 for 9, you know, she threw them up there, that's for sure. And the one thing that we kept saying is don't stop shooting them, because we saw her do that in the tournament last year. She stopped shooting, and that's what you don't want to do. Just 2 for 9, you talk about roughly. I mean, she's a 50% three-point shooter, and like you said, she makes, let's just say, the latter half 4, right? 4 of the 9. That would be, you know, on the underside of 50%, just to make her a little human, right? It's a tie game, you know, or you get Collins in double digits with one more. You talk about the free throws. I mean, they were at the line for 27 tries, only made 19. I'm sorry, 9 numbers are escaping me. They were at the line for 27 tries and made 19. Granted, not everybody's going to shoot like the men last night from the charity stripe, which we'll get to, which was phenomenal, by the way. But they had to fix something, and from what we could tell, you put up 74 points, you're going to win a lot of games in D2 women's basketball. And so the next day, as they took on Sonoma State, they really focused on the defensive aspect of the game. And the second day as a whole, we saw a lot less scoring.
Definitely a lot less scoring. I believe both teams scored in around the mid-60s in that game against Sonoma State. And what helped is that Alana Scott finally found a rhythm again. She scored, well, it felt, you could feel, it looked like she got her groove back. It looked 10 times better than what she did at Chico, and that definitely helped the Penguins get the victory.
Yeah, she shot or she made twice as many when you talk about, she made four. She was 4 for 12. So 4 for 12 at about 25%. That's still not, or I'm sorry, that is not 25%. That's about 33%. That's still not where you expect Alana Scott to be. But opening the season, so that's what, 6 for 21 opening the season. It's not what you'd think it would be if you're Alana Scott, but Diaz had 19. Scott had 14. She was also 4 for 12 from indoors. And then Julio Raso added 11 points in that second game. And Raso was a name that we didn't call the first day, only on the one free throw that she made.
Raso looked very cold in that game against Chico State. She was playing kind of poor, actually, against Chico, but then she comes out against Sonoma State. She looks 10 times better. It looked like she figured something out, and she really took control of the game for a small portion.
The one thing that we were saying before the season started that we'd like to see from Raza, we know she can shoot. She plays a guard at a 4 or 5 position. She's a guard at 6 feet tall, which is a tall guard to be on this team. And she was matched up against Ugochi Anudokum for a lot of that game. And what we said from improving from last year to this year was the physicality on defense for Raso. Did she step up the physicality defensively? And her first test was really guarding Anudokum.
Anudokum was fantastic against Notre Dame Dana Moore. I mean, I know the Argonauts are not the strongest of opponents, but what you see, once you see what they did to Chico State and cooling down that offense that torched the Penguins, Anudokum was really good, especially down in the lane. And then when it comes to her defense was fantastic. Had a couple of big blocks against NDNU, and then Raso kept her silent for pretty much the entire game.
And Anudokum did lead Sonoma State in scoring with 15, Keach 11, Santos and Northern both had 10. And on the side of the Penguins, as we said, three double-digit scorers in Diaz, Scott, and Raso. The Penguins shot considerably better. I mean, when you talk about that first game against Chico State, as we pull up the numbers here, as a team, they shot 14%, 3 for 21 from downtown. I mean, this is a Penguins team that came in fourth in the country in D2 in three-point percentage. And, you know, it's just not what you would expect. And then going into the game against Sonoma State, as their name escaped me for a moment, 6 for 23, so they doubled the number again. So it kind of seems like how Scott goes from the three-point line, the Penguins will go from beyond the arc.
Yeah, and that's going to come with formulating their identity. It's very early on in the season, only 2 games. I think the biggest thing that they need to ramp up a little bit more is that defense, the perimeter defense especially. We saw that weakness against Chico State. But once they start to formulate their identity, start to work out the kinks, and try to let go of last season, you came one game away from the championship. Try to use that as fuel to push yourself to get to the championship game this season this year. Don't stay in the past. Let it go and focus on the season in front of you.
So I want to ask you, seeing these, the freshmen that are sophomores this year, when you talk about those like Sydney LaRocca, Dina Del Rosario, and a lot of other, Julio Raso was another one. I know you didn't get to see them last year, but the youth on this team and how much that they have contributed to this team so far, especially when you're talking about the name Sydney LaRocca.
Oh, LaRocca was fantastic in those first 2 games. She really, while it felt like she was carrying a load for the entire team, especially in that first game towards the middle part where Diaz was kind of quiet, especially in that third quarter, LaRocca was able to keep them in the game and keep it close to where the Penguins can try to forge a comeback in that fourth quarter. And now the experience that they had last year, a winning experience, will definitely help them move forward to become a better team.
Lady Penguins sit at 1-1 on the season. They go to another tournament at Notre Dame Dana Moore. Of course, they will not play Notre Dame. It is a non-conference tournament that starts tomorrow. So the Lady Penguins will be back at it at 5 o'clock tomorrow night against Stanislaus State. And then again on Saturday at 5 o'clock against Humboldt State. So just to take a quick look at the Stanislaus Warriors, they are. They're 0-2 this year. They played Northwest Nazarene and lost 88-59. And then played Central Washington and lost 94-59. The one thing you can say about Stanislaus so far is they're consistent by putting up 59 points.
Well, I guess the goal for the Penguins against Stanislas loss is make sure you score more than 59 points, and then I think you have a good chance of winning.
Then they will take on Humboldt State on Saturday again at 5. Humboldt State this year 2-0, so you're kind of getting both sides of the argument here for the Penguins in Game 1. What it looks like it's going to be is a refresher to get you ready for Humboldt State, who beat Bethesda 109-40.
Yikes.
109-40. Yeah, you heard that right. And then beat Southern Oregon 76-61. So it came out real hot in their tournament to open the season. And, well, you know, it's going to be one heck of a tournament for the Penguins. I mean, it looks like both of those games that we just talked about were exhibition games. So then they also beat Western Washington 76-66 and beat Seattle Pacific 79-77. So their two games to open the season were exhibition games against Bethesda and Southern Oregon, where they put up 109 points. And then they opened it in the West Region Crossover Classic and a 10-point win and a 2-point win. So ever since they put up 109, Humboldt State has cooled off just a little bit on the offensive side of the ball. But the Penguins still going up against a Stanislaus State team first, that's 0-2. And then the Humboldt State team, that is 2-0. Before they come back here next Tuesday, the women back in the Collins Center next Tuesday, November 20th at 5:30. That's a doubleheader with men's and women's basketball. And the men will play somebody else. Men's basketball. We'll talk about them and their first two non-conference games at San Francisco State to open the season. And then the home opener last night when we come back right here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. You're listening to Hot in the Igloo.
And I wish I was an octopus. They're right to show the world something never seen.
It's all good. From Diego to the Bay, your city is the bomb if your city making pain. Throw up a finger if you feel the same way. Straight putting it down for California, yeah.
Welcome back, everybody. Hot in the Igloo, live at 5 p.m. on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Well, we talked about the women, 1-1, back in the Conlin Center on Tuesday. Let's talk about the men. So, Ethan.
Yes.
This is the best the men's record has looked I can remember since I've been here. The men, my freshman year, 10-16 overall. The last year, 5-22 overall. This year, they are 2-1.
Oh my goodness.
I know. Can you believe it? No, we're not trying to get off on a little bit too much of a hype train here. But when you talk about the team going from 10-16 to 5-22, that's a huge drop off, right? And then you come back this year, the 2-1. Just by watching these guys this year. Nothing against the guys that were here my freshman year, like Josh Ramirez, Josh Armstrong, Rio Tawatari, and guys like that. But this team, they just look a little bit better. And boy, did they look good last night. We're not there yet. They opened their season at San Francisco State against Sonoma State. That game was tied at 69 going into overtime. The Penguins had a 14-point lead at one point in that game. Tied at 69. Sonoma State tied it. They were down by one with 2-point-some-odd seconds left. Got fouled, went to the line, made one of two. Tied it, went to overtime. The Penguins outscored Sonoma State 10-2 in that overtime period. And they looked pretty good. CJ led the Penguins with 19 points. He also had 15 rebounds, so a double-double for CJ. Jordan Williams had 14 in that game. Averbuck, 12. Chris Williams, the second, 12. Ezra Talbert, 12. Futch, 7. And that's some production up and down the lineup.
Yeah, and that's a well, C.J. Thomas leading the team in scoring, I think is going to be a thread throughout this entire season, especially with what we saw last night. Not there yet, but that's one thing about this team is they share the love. They give everybody a chance to put points on the board, and I think that's what's helping them be a little bit more special than in years past.
In that first game, they were only 5 for 22 from downtown. Similar to the women, the men shot 22%, 32 points in the paint, and or 34, I'm sorry, points in the paint, and 22 points off turnovers. So it seemed like every time Sonoma State turned over the ball, which was 20 times, it was pretty evident that the Penguins were going to put it back through the hoop for a score. Ended up winning that game 79-71 in overtime. And then the next day, took on San Francisco State. This game was back and forth. It was 29-28 SF State at halftime. Outscored the Penguins by 10 in the second half, and the Penguins ended up losing 66-55. CJ once again had 14 points, only 5 rebounds in that game. Ezra Talbert, 14 points, 5 rebounds. Sam Averbuch, 7 points, 5 rebounds. And not too many points in the paint, 20. 18 points off for turnovers in that game. And they didn't turn the ball over much, just 13 times. But and that was compared to San Francisco State's 19 times. But San Francisco State, they played really well. They shot 34% from downtown. The Penguins in the game, again, 7 for 26, 26%. Now, the moment that everybody has been waiting for, last night, Cal State Dominguez Hills in the house. Gold Rush night, free t-shirts, free ice cream. Ethan had 4 bowls.
At least it felt like it.
Of the free ice cream. And what an exciting game we had last night. Just to recap it, 44-40, Penguins at half in that game. And they were shooting pretty well at the end of the first half. They were perfect from the free throw line, 8 for 8. They were 4 for 7 from downtown, so 57% from downtown, and were 16 for 29 inside, over 50%. So you're thinking this team is looking pretty good here on opening night in front of a packed house in the Conlin Center. And 4-point lead at half, what was going through your mind after watching the Penguins for the first time live?
They looked really good, especially a couple of the transfers. Ezra Talbert was very much a standout player for the Penguins yesterday. Just in the second half, something disappointing happened. I'll let you explain that later on. But he looked really good, especially on defense. Christian Futch had a really good first half, having to block the 7-1 Whitsett. And I was talking to Futch a little bit today, and there was a little bit of jawing back and forth between those two, and that became very evident. Both of them got a little heated towards the end. But my thought is they looked really good, and I would not be surprised if this 4-point lead lasted the entire game.
And it was back and forth in that second half. It seemed like we were just trading buckets. It didn't really seem like anybody was missing. And when you look at the side for Dominguez Hills, 44 points in the paint, 30 points off of 21 Penguin turnovers. So it's a little less than half. For the Penguins, 36 points in the paint, 5 points off of turnovers, and Dominguez Hills only turned the ball over 13 times. 5 points off of turnovers. This wasn't really a game where there were a lot of turnovers. I mean, 21 for Dominican, more than Dominguez Hills 13, but there weren't many empty possessions. I mean, the turnovers were sometimes careless passes, but other times the ball getting poked away. Tough defense in the backcourt, getting trapped, you know, forcing an errant pass or something like that. And I just want to, you know, talk about the free throw shooting. I mean, the free throw shooting was phenomenal for the Penguins last night. And, you know, coaches will say the game's won and lost from the free throw line. This game was won at the free throw line. I mean, talk about the leading scorers real quick. C.J. Thomas, 26. Averbuch, 18. CW2 had 16. Futch had 12. Hepler had 11. This Penguins team, all told, shot 69% from three. And they didn't shoot that often from three. They were 9 for 13. But, I mean, I'm sure Coach Booker and Coach Waterman would take 9 for 13 over 5 for 26. 69.2%, and they mattered. I mean, Averbuch was 3 for 3. Christopher Williams is second, 4 for 5. Ryan Hepler, 2 for 2. I mean, these are guys coming off the – I mean, Hepler came off the bench and was 2 for 2. Of course, Averbuch and Christopher Williams II started that game. And boy, did it come down to the wire.
Oh, when Averbuch was at the free throw line with a chance to put the game to bed and he missed that first one, it kind of like sunk the Conlon Center a little bit. And then when that second one bounced off the back of the glass and just barely went in, it was like,
whew. Let's see, it was 94-91 at that time when Averbuch was fouled. The Penguins were in bonus to go to the line, and he was guaranteed to shoot two. So you're thinking, okay, Averbuch makes one, this game's on ice. He makes two, that's even better, right? Because he can't throw up a three, get fouled, have a chance to tie the game. Like you said, he just bricked the first one. He just missed it. And that was the first miss for the Penguins at the free throw line all night. They ended up 24 for 25 from the free throw line. And Averbuch, the one casualty. And then when you're talking about there were 8 seconds.
Two seconds? 2.6 seconds left on the clock.
And Dominguez Hills inbounds it to Hicks, who drains a half-court buzzer beater to end the game 95-94. The Penguins still on top. And Gabriel Hicks, you know, we talked about him all night for Dominguez Hills, him being a spark plug. Hicks ended the leading score for Dominguez Hills with 18 points. He was 6 for 7 from the line, 2 for 4 from downtown, 5 for 9 from inside. And that's second three-pointer. I mean, if you talk about if Sam Averbuch doesn't make that second free throw, or if somebody else isn't perfect, right? You talk about perfection. Everybody wants to be perfect. CJ from the line was perfect, and he was 12 for 12. Think about it. CJ goes 11 for 12. CJ will take 11 for 12 from the free throw line every single time he steps on the court, but not last night.
And what helped is that CJ got to the free throw line. Not only that, but he was being very aggressive underneath the basket, working hard for those points, and drew fouls that led to that. So not only did he lead in scoring, but did he take a three at all in the game?
Yes.
How many?
One.
Did he make it?
No.
So that shows that a lot of his points came in the lane, in the paint. He was getting very physical. And I think that also what led to the Penguins shooting better at three-point percentage is that they didn't take as much. They took the easy shots that were available and matched Dominguez Hills and the points that they were trying to take instead of trying to go for the killer three and missing on a bad shot selection.
Oh, boy, every time they needed one, though, they knocked it down.
Yes.
It was Christopher Williams or it was Ryan Hepler that just knocked it down. And we talk about Jordan Williams being the facilitator, okay? Jordan Williams, who was a captain last year as a freshman, he is the leader of this team. You know, he is the field general, if you will, the court general. He ended the night with 6 points. He fouled out with, I believe he was the second to foul out. Ezra yes. Talbert fouled out first. Ezra Talbert also ended the night with 6 points. And with both of them fouling out with 6 points, you're talking about Jordan Williams, the facilitator, the instructor on the court, and Ezra Talbert, the 6'9 transfer that can shoot from downtown. He was 0 for 1.
And who can guard Whitsett, the right. 7-1 Whitsett.
You know, Talbert fouled out of that game, and we're going, who is going to guard Whitsett? Because Whitsett's 7-1, he's already a mismatch on Talbert. He's got 4 inches on him. I mean, and Talbert's the biggest guy we got at 6'9", okay? He's much bigger than Futch. Futch, 6'8", okay? And it was really... Futch was tasked with guarding a 7'1" monster, and he held his own.
Not only that, but he was able to score against him. When a guy has 4 inches on you, you don't think you'd be able to score, especially when you're a center trying to work the ball inside the paint and take those easy layup shots, but managed to work around Whitsett with the help of Jordan Williams. Jordan Williams with a couple of beautiful behind-the-back passes underneath the bucket,
my.
Able to set up Futch beautifully for scoring opportunities.
And when you talk about Jordan Williams, we talk about him being the facilitator. He had 5 assists last night. Can we just talk about everybody else? CJ had 3 assists. Averbuch had 2 assists. CW2 had 3 assists. Talbert had an assist. Futch had 2. Hepler had 3. Harper had 1. And Romeo Mays, who was the only other Penguin to touch the floor, didn't have one, but he was on the floor for 2 minutes. So you're talking about everybody that had significant playing time, including Jared Harper, who was on the floor for 13 minutes. He was 0 for 1 total and had one assist. They accounted for 20 total assists. I mean, we give Jordan Williams a lot of credit for being the facilitator, but that speaks volumes to how unselfish this team really is.
And that also shows that when someone like Jordan Williams is off the court like he was, they were able to survive the last 10 minutes of the second half because they share the ball. They give it around. They create scoring opportunities. There was one moment where Hippler passed it off to Averbuch, and Futch set a beautiful screen and set up Averbuch for a big three at the time. And, of course, the Penguins went on to win by one. So if any part of that play is off, the Penguins lose the game.
Yeah, and you talk about Christian Futch. I mean, Christian Futch coming into this year had a big role to fill. I mean, he was the center last year as a freshman. He tore a ligament in his thumb, had to have surgery, played the last third of the year, I'll say, with an injured thumb. It was his shooting thumb, which is never good. You know, and, you know, having those guys come in, like Ezra Talbert, and how quickly this team meshed together. And Christian Futch really saying, this team is pass first. Nobody is shoot first. Everybody's looking for somebody else, and then if they have to take the shot, they'll take the shot. But with it being a pass first team as opposed to a me first team, it gives it a different feel.
Definitely, but I think
the great Christian Futch, oh, yeah, I might add. Great, sorry to cut you off.
The number 34, the great Christian Futch.
The great Christian Futch.
But one part that shows a little bit of, you can tell that they're new to playing with each other, is how they played in the fast breaks. They didn't really play as clean as they could in their fast breaks, because when they went to pass the ball, they couldn't really, you could tell that the full chemistry wasn't there, because it's not like you can guess yet where the guy's going to be, where you want to give him the ball. And that will come in time. You'll start to understand each other's tendencies a little bit more and more. And then that, honestly, that was the only part of their game yesterday.
I agree.
That didn't look good at all was the way that they played on fast breaks.
Yeah.
You start to play with each other a little bit more. You learn each other's tendencies a little bit more. And all of a sudden, you're going to look really good scoring in the triple digits.
Yeah, I mean, points off a turnover and fast breaks, I think, go hand in hand there. You had 36 points in the paint, 23 points off the bench. I mean, you know, Dominguez Hill, is credit to them, they had 30 points off the bench, and 30 points off a turnover, 21 on fast breaks for Dominguez Hill. And for the Penguins, 5 points off a turnover, 8 points on fast break. And like I said, I think those things mesh together when you're talking about they get a turnover and then they're trying to go fast. I think we even said it a couple of times that the Penguins, when they do get those quick turnovers, almost need to slow down, because they work better when they are running their offense and they're really milking the shot clock down to 12, 8, 10 seconds and getting a shot off. And it was fun to watch them. You know, they almost, you talk about teams like Virginia, right? When you're talking D1, that teams like Coach Waterman refers to all the time that slow you down and really lull you to sleep. The Penguins last night, I think, realized that going fast in transition wasn't working. So they slowed things down to set up their offense, but they ran the offense efficiently and quickly, if that makes any sense. They slowed down to get everything set up, and then boom, they were off. And when you talk about that, you know, Virginia goes and beats team 70-63. And both of the, it was a high scoring game because of how efficient the both offenses were.
And it's like, how do I say this? It's kind of like the read option in college football. It's kind of a fast-paced option where you need to make decisions fast, but you also take your time with it. You let the play develop in front of you, and that's what Dominican's basketball team needs to do. The fast transition is not their strongest game, and we saw that last night against Dominguez Hills. What works for them is when they let the play develop in front of them and take the easy shot. And it might be a really quick shot and might happen right away, but sometimes you need to let the play develop in front of you in order to get the easy points. And that's what Dominican did really good yesterday and why they beat the Toros.
I can't get over the 9 for 13, 69.2% from beyond the arc, and 96% from the free throw line. 96% from the free throw line. And that this year is just is helping the Penguins percentage from the free throw line, I mean, immensely. They're now at the line, 50 for 60 at 83%. And as a team, that's where you want to be, is at 83%. And if they can keep shooting like that, you talk about your bigs, right? The bigs need to play well and shoot well from the free throw line. You don't hear about the guys that are 6'6", 6'8", 7 feet shooting well. And CJ kind of proved everybody wrong in that category last night. It's obviously an asset of his game that he's been working on.
12 for 12. That's all you need to say. 12 for 12 from the free throw line for CJ. And like I said, him leading the Penguins in scoring might be a theme to watch as the Penguin season continues to unfold.
Ladies are back in the Conlin Center on Tuesday. Again, they play San Francisco State. The men go to Cal State Monterey Bay on Saturday. They play at 3. That's an away game. And then they're back home again following the women. Women take on San Francisco State once again. The men next Tuesday at 7:30 take on Cal State East Bay. So Penguin basketball back in action on Tuesday. Penguin Radio 5:30 and 7:30. Men and women, our first men and women's doubleheader. We had a couple of doubleheaders in the tournament, but not men and women back to back. So basketball is starting to heat up. Penguin men are 2-1 on the season and look to continue to roll, led by 4 D1 transfers. And just how much they've played in and meant to this Penguin team in the first three games is they carry a heavy weight around campus, that's for sure, when you see the guys walking around. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit of football right here on Hot in the Igloo, live at 5 p.m. on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Hot in the Igloo live at 5 p.m. on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Well, we talked a little bit about men's and women's basketball, so now we will move on to the NFL, and we got a couple of NFL gurus in here, Ethan Estrada and Paul Gunnis, and I know, Ethan, you're waiting for it, so go ahead, tell us about how much Blake Bortles is your favorite quarterback in the NFL.
Well, now that the legend of Nathan Peterman is now officially out of the NFL, Blake Bortles is now the worst quarterback in the NFL to date. He is terrible, unless he plays the Indianapolis Colts, where he has 12 touchdowns and no interceptions in his career against my Colts. And I'm glad to say that we finally beat him in Indianapolis. Going into that game, he had only thrown 3 touchdowns and 5 interceptions in his last 4 games. And then he throws 2 touchdowns and over 300 yards against the Colts. Oh, my goodness. At least we won. We freaking beat the Jaguars.
Well, from what you were telling me yesterday, Ethan, I think the Jaguars might be recruiting you to come play some football, considering you said you were the Russell Wilson of your 7th grade class. So
Hey. Not gonna argue.
If any not gonna argue that. Any execs are tuning in, they'll give you a call.
Can we talk about the NFC and this New Orleans team? I mean, they played Cincinnati, beat them to a pulp, and forced Cincinnati to fire their defensive coordinator.
I think New Orleans is the best team in the NFC because not only did they beat the Rams, but they put up 40 points on that defense, which their defense was supposed to be the strongest part of the Los Angeles Rams. But then you look at their defense, they're giving up a lot of points to good teams. When they play bad teams, their defense plays good, as it should. But when they play good teams, they give up 30-plus points, and that's unacceptable.
Well, here's my thing with the NFC South as a whole. It kind of reminds you of Big 12 football. Like, they're going to go out there, they're going to score, like, you know, 60 points or something like that, ridiculous number. And then you have the Rams, which, in my opinion, is more methodical. Even with Sean McVay's creativity, it just... they are, in my opinion, a more sound football team. It doesn't necessarily mean they're a better football team, just because, as we saw, what was it, last week or the week before, the Saints are just going to come out, throw the ball, and dare you to beat them. And the Rams sort of fell into the way they wanted to play rather than sticking to their own game. You know, Todd Gurley didn't have his best game that day. And I think that they'll make adjustments in playoff football. It's going to be a different story. I think if that's the NFC Championship, Rams, Saints, you're going to see the Saints struggle a little bit more.
But I think if they, meet in the playoffs again, what will help the Saints is Drew Brees has playoff experience. Not only that, but he has playoff success. The dude has a Super Bowl ring on his finger. Jared Goff, he's only played in one really high pressured game, and that was last year against Atlanta in the wild card game. Even when he played in Cal, he didn't really win a lot of football games for the Golden Bears. Goes into a high pressure situation with the Rams, doesn't succeed right away, but now he only has one really high pressure game under his belt. And I think it'll take him a little bit. I think after this season, after he gets a little bit more playoff experience, I think the Rams will be so much better off than what they are this year.
Well, my thing, really quick, Forrest, with that, with your comment, just is I don't think he'll need to be perfect if they establish a run game. With Todd Gurley, who's in my opinion the best running back in the NFL, and statistics will show you he is the last 2 years just been the best running back in the NFL. If Todd Gurley is, you know, if the offense is running through Todd Gurley, I think it doesn't matter. I mean, you don't have to have an A1 quarterback. We've seen that all year. Jared Goff, his numbers look really good, but it's easy to have your numbers look really good when on third down it's third and three or third and two rather than you know, it being third and 10 where you know it's a pass situation. Now with it being third and two, you can play action it to Gurley, go downfield, and we've seen that. That's how the Rams are winning so many games this year. And that's what the Eagles are missing this year is just that consistency factor of always having third and short. Now, this year, the Eagles, because of injuries and other factors, are, you know, the same as everybody else in that aspect. And that's what they really lost, in my opinion, was just that it's so much easier to play football when you have third and two, third and one, third and three, because then it eliminates the whole, I'm going to pass it here. And when a defensive coordinator that's a good defensive coordinator in the NFL knows you're going to pass the ball in a certain situation, they know how to adjust and make sure you don't get the first down. And so I think that's been the biggest thing that we've seen in the NFC this year.
It's obvious that the Los Angeles Rams and the New Orleans Saints are the two best teams in the NFC in a possible NFC championship matchup. How good are the Chicago Bears? Can Chicago make a run at the NFC championship game?
Well, the Bears are, I think, a very sneaky team. They're very much under the radar because you have teams like the Rams and the Saints taking up all the NFL headlines. But when you look at the stats, the Bears have the best defense in football. Not only that, but arguably the best pass rusher in football, a rejuvenated Khalil Mack.
Well, I have two things to say about the Bears, going off your points, agreeing with what you're saying. The first thing is, if you believe defense wins championships, yes, the Bears have a very good chance of just being that sleeper team in the playoffs that comes out of the North and, you know, runs the table and wins the Super Bowl. However, which Mitch Trubisky is going to show up?
That's the only question. Yeah. Trubisky is not experienced, and he does not have playoff experience. I mean, the most high-pressure game he was in was a bowl game at, you know, North Carolina.
Well, they played Stanford.
And the thing is, too, about Trubisky is he's just so inconsistent. One day he shows up, he looks like the next, you know, Joe Montana. The next week, he's looking like Joe Schmo. So if, you know, the Mitch that's so good, that looks like that composed championship caliber quarterback shows up, and you have that defense, and Mac's able to stay healthy, which he's had some issues with this year, he's missed a couple games, then yes, the Bears can make a run. But, you know, I think that there's other teams that just are more established. I think the Bears are a team to look out for in 2019, 2020. I guess this is going to be 2019 Super Bowl, but 2020 Super Bowl, 2021 Super Bowl. That's when I'm looking at the Bears because they're young. They have guys that are like Khalil Mack there for what? What do you say? 5-6 year contract, something like that. So I think that give them time. If they win the Super Bowl this year, it'll be kind of they got hot at the right time. If not, it'll be next couple of years you're going to see, you know, that Bears team. They're similar to the Rams last year.
I'll give you a couple examples of not that great quarterbacks who have won Super Bowls with great defenses. Brad Johnson in the 2002 Super Bowl beat the Oakland Raiders for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You could honestly tell anybody that Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl and they'd honestly think you made it up.
Yeah, I did not know who he was. When you said 2002, I knew who won the Super Bowl, but I didn't know he was a quarterback.
2000, Trent Dilfer won with the Ravens defense. And say what you want, but Eli Manning, when he was younger, was not the greatest quarterback in the world.
Helmet catch, David Tyree.
Exactly. He his defense carried him to the championship. He did enough to get them to the Super Bowls.
Well, I'd add another one onto that list real quick. Peyton Manning, his last Super Bowl. Peyton Manning, his last Super Bowl, threw the ball like I throw it lefty. I mean, that guy, he could barely launch the thing. And that defense, Von Miller just won them the Super Bowl. So I'd agree with you that defense can win championships. I'm just saying they can only do so much if Trubisky's throwing three interceptions, you know, four interceptions. Those guys obviously were not extremely mistake prone. Maybe they were later on in their careers, but when they made those championship runs, like even Eli, he limited his mistakes. That was like his least interceptions that he's ever had in his career, I believe, was that season that they beat the Patriots.
Well, they did it twice.
Yeah, well,
the first time
when they were undefeated. I believe it might have been the second one, actually. I know one of those seasons was the least interceptions he's ever had in his career. And when you limit your mistakes, all you need is a game manager when you have the best defense in the NFL. So what I'm trying to say is I don't think Trubisky is a game manager. He's too inexperienced. He's too young. So give him some time. Give him another year or two. The same thing we're saying about Jared Goff, I think we're going to be saying about Mitch Trubisky.
When you talk about the NFC North with Chicago, Minnesota, and Green Bay, Chicago 6-3, Minnesota 5-3, Green Bay 4-4, is it fair to say that Chicago is the best team in that division? I mean, this division is far from, you know, solved who's going to win that division. And I think you can make a strong argument that at the helm with Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay has as good of a chance to win that division as Chicago.
Green Bay is dangerous only because of Aaron Rodgers. When you look at the team as a whole, they're not very good.
Interesting how we're talking about polar opposites. Great teams with a very, very inexperienced quarterback, and then average teams with an Aaron Rodgers, and they have almost the same exact chance to make the playoffs and win that division.
Well, here's the thing. I was just going to say a similar thing with the fact that you look at Green Bay, in my opinion, and statistically one of the worst defenses in the NFL with the best arguably the best quarterback in the NFL. And then you have the Bears on the other end of it, like we were just talking about, best defense in the NFL, worst quarterback. You put Aaron Rodgers on that Bears team. Yeah, it's a joke.
Oh, no, that's dangerous. That's dangerous.
Don't even say that.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, I mean, I think this is not the year for the Packers. It just, they're not good defensively. The 49ers looked like a Super Bowl winning team against them. And granted, they also looked like a Super Bowl winning team against the Raiders. But this is the Niners we're talking about. And that was the Niners with C.J. Beathard or whatever.
Bethard.
At Iowa. I call him Beathard because he just, it's hard to watch. But anyways, when you have C.J. Beathard tearing you apart, you can't win Super Bowls. Because guess what? Drew Brees or even Jared Goff is going to tear you apart defensively. And, I mean, I think there's no chance for that Green Bay team this year.
Is anybody going to contest Kansas City in the AFC? I mean, there's always New England. You have to throw New England in there just because of Belichick and Tom Brady. But then you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, who just put up 51 points this last week. I mean, nobody's really going to come out of the AFC South. Houston's the best team there, and I don't think they can really contend with the other three division leaders.
I think Houston is a very sneaky team because of their pass rush. They have two very talented pass rushers in Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt, and Deshaun Watson has that offense running on all cylinders right now. He is a very dynamic quarterback, and they've won six in a row. That cannot be understated anymore. The Houston Texans have won six games in a row, which is phenomenal. But the Kansas City Chiefs, their offense is fantastic, but they have the worst defense in the NFL, and that will come back and hurt them when they play a team like the Patriots or a team like the Steelers with experienced quarterbacks who can slice their defense apart.
Well, here's another thing, guys. Guess who's sitting at 7-2 right now?
The Los Angeles Chargers.
The Los Angeles Chargers. Mm-hmm. And they're the sleeper team in the AFC right now because everybody's talking about out of the AFC West, Kansas City this, Kansas City that. Phillip Rivers is sitting there like, hey guys, I'm 7-2 and I got way more experience than Mahomes. You want to talk about Mahomes or you want to talk about playoff experience? Mahomes has got none. So in my opinion, I mean, you see Phillip Rivers, who is waiting for that chance, waiting for that opportunity. He's been waiting for it his whole career. I think if we see him in a, you know, deep in a playoff situation, it could be dangerous.
And what's hurting the Chargers right now, yeah, they're 7-2, but they can't fill a 30,000-seat stadium. That's why you haven't really heard a lot about the Chargers, but they are a really good team.
Like the opposite of Oakland. Oakland can't win a dang game, and they sell out. What's up with that?
I saw a funny tweet yesterday by a professional poker player who lives in Las Vegas, and he said, hey, you know what, Oakland, you guys can have the Raiders back. We don't want them anymore because, they made the move, made the deal when the Raiders looked really good last season. Or was it
the
last
year before last season?
The year before last season, right? And then last year happens, and it was like, oh, they're okay. This year happens, you think Gruden's coming. Oh, he's going to be the savior. And he looks like he's stuck in the media booth. So I think the Raiders have major issues, and going into a rebuild with a new stadium, I don't think they're going to be selling out for much longer.
Talking about games coming up this week, Green Bay and Seattle are playing right now. Green Bay's on top 7-3, 6 minutes left in the first quarter in that game. You have Pittsburgh and Jacksonville. Jacksonville's
not looking good.
Not looking good. They started off as one of the better defenses, in my opinion, in the AFC, and that 3-6. Big Ben might have his way with another 50-point game this week.
Not only that, but Connor's going to run all over them. That Jacksonville defense has been very susceptible, especially to the run. They can't seem to stop it, and when you think about it, that's odd when you think about the people who they have up front. Last week against Andrew Luck, no sacks. Only hit him once, and that was after a play that led to a 15-yard penalty.
Couple of inter-division games this week. Minnesota and Chicago, that game will be played at Soldier Field. I think this game might show us who is going to win that division in the NFC North between the Bears and the Vikings. We talked about these two teams being very close. Bears 6-3, Vikings 5-3-1, and I don't think Kirk Cousins has got off to the start that he thought he was going to have in Minnesota.
Especially when you look at the difference between the team. The skill positions in Chicago, definitely not as strong as the skill positions in Minnesota. When you have wide receivers like Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen, Kirk Cousins at the helm of that offense, going into the season, you're thinking like, here we go, Vikings are going to do it. They're poised for a big run. Yeah, they got blown out in the NFC title game, but that was with Case Keenum. We have a chance, but they just haven't been able to get off the ground.
I mean, to be honest, there's an argument to say that Kirk Cousins, Case Keenum, same player. I mean, Kirk Cousins, to me, one of the most overrated guys. He doesn't deserve $80 million to play.
Oh,
anything.
You didn't like that?
No.
You didn't like that?
That guy, to be honest, Vikings way overpaid him. They could have paid Teddy Bridgewater, and I think they'd just be doing just as good, if not better. I mean, I think Teddy Bridgewater's been another really underrated guy in the league. He's a hard worker. That's always his reputation. And he's injury prone, don't get me wrong, but give a guy a chance. He's never really gotten a full season with this Vikings team. And I think that defense looks just as good as they always have, except against the Bills, which was very strange. They lost 41-something to the
Bills. Well, speaking of the Bills, can we talk about the Bills this last week? I mean,
Matt Barkley, baby.
No. Jesus, can we get off the SC thing?
I'm a UCLA fan. I'm just saying,
well,
I saw...
I know, you say that every time, but you keep bringing up these SC quarterbacks.
Well, here's the thing. I saw Matt Barkley tear apart UCLA, and then UCLA decided to tear his back apart.
Oh, jeez. Thank you, by the way. That led Notre Dame to a perfect season in 2012.
Yeah, so interesting fact about that. He was supposed to go to the NFL his junior year. He would have went top four.
Right.
Instead, he stays for his senior season because he wants to graduate from SC. And in his second-to-last game as a Trojan, or third-to-last game because they probably were going to go to a bowl game, his third-to-last game as a Trojan hurts his spine, and he's been struggling with it ever since. But that guy knows how to play quarterback. I mean, we watched him play at USC, and he looked like a top-five pick his first 3 years, even his last year until he got hurt. So... watch out. Matt Barkley might be a name that's a late bloomer in the NFL. I mean, if they give him a real chance in Buffalo and he starts winning some games, who knows?
I don't think Buffalo will give him a chance because they're giving Josh Allen the chance. They traded up to get him. I think a guy like Matt Barkley is going to have to go to a team like Arizona to get his chance, a team that's in desperate need of a quarterback.
I don't know. Josh Rosen's going to be a good quarterback, UCLA fan.
Yeah, that's the inner Bruin in you.
Josh Rosen's going to be a good quarterback. You don't replace a UCLA guy with a USC guy. Come on now.
That's true.
I mean, and Arizona tried their luck with the USC guy. They got Matt Leinart. He was really good.
He was really good, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was great.
Was he the kicker? That's right. Yeah. So one more game. We have just a couple minutes left, you guys. Kansas City, LA, probably the one of the higher touted games on the schedule this year in the NFL at the moment, at least, with the Rams at 9-1 and the Chiefs at 9-1. And that game was moved from Mexico City back to the Coliseum, by the way,
because of poor field conditions at Estudio Azteca.
Well, here was the funny part. I saw another tweet 2 days ago that said, "Great idea, NFL. Let's move it from Mexico City, where the players could get hurt, to now where they're going to get lung disease from all the smoke in the air, because the air quality at the Rams Stadium, I think, was like 185, which is not as bad as here, but it's pretty close." And so, like, that was the whole thing on Twitter, was like, it's a lose-lose situation, because you're going to have really bad air quality or really bad field. I definitely think that the stadium down in Mexico City should have done a better job to prepare, but it's going to be interesting to see if that plays a factor, that smoke plays a factor in Monday night.
I think it's going to be a shootout, though. Two offenses who are very high-powered, two defenses who can't seem to stop good offenses. I think this one's going to reach into the 40s, just like that Chiefs-Patriots game.
Rams favored by 3. Agree, disagree?
I think I'm going to – oh, no. My goodness, this is going to be a really good game, because they seem to match up on every single level in terms of skill positions. Both of them have really good running backs. I think I disagree. I think Kansas City has a little bit more of an edge, because I feel like Patrick Mahomes' pocket presence is better than Jared Goff's pocket presence.
You know, they call this thing a trap game. When a game looks like it's really easy to pick, Rams minus 3, I'm definitely going to hammer Kansas City, you know. But what you always see seems to end up happening is these teams that shouldn't be favored by as much, these guys in Vegas know why they should be favored by that much. And so I think we might see the Rams cover the spread, in my opinion.
Okay, last question before we have to go. You taking over under 80 points combined?
Over.
Under.
Just to be that guy.
Just to tilt Ethan over here.
No show next week, you guys. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners out there. We will not be on the air. We will be getting fat, eating some Thanksgiving food. So we hope you guys are too. And that does it for us here on Hot in the Igloo, live at 5 p.m. on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We'll see you in 2 weeks. I should...